Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on organic, right after this message. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child in the country. It was man, woman, and child in the world. Today, it's down to 38 days. Actually, it's less than 38 days. You know, we Americans produce grain for export, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. Now, this globalization may be good for business, but globalization isn't good for you, and it's not good for me. Back in 1940, we Americans, all of us, had a pantry full of food so that we could feed our families for a year, some more. Today, we have a three-day food supply in our refrigerators, and we believe passionately in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery and that they're going to feed us forever. But you know, over the past 60 years, we Americans have traded a one-year food supply for about 3 days. I don't think that's too wise. And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. And these evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scriptures how to be a life survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number 417-273-4967. And remember, my subsistence and survival school is also available in compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about organic. I told you that this book on organic living, published by Barron's, written by Karen Sullivan. You can probably get a copy of Barnes & Noble. I think that's where they brought it from. And it's got 10 steps that deal with this thing of organic. I get a lot of calls here, and people want to know, well, just what is this organic anyway? I hear you talking about it quite often, and GMOs and agriculture and agricultural topics. Well, about 12% of us buy organic in the country right now. That's quite a little marketing bunch. That's 35 million people in the United States. I don't know how many people around the world buy organic, but we're the kind of people that would go to a health food store and pay $3 for a dozen eggs before we'd buy a dozen eggs out of the grocery store for a dollar that are chemically grown. Now, I want to tell you why. I'm an old-timey chicken farmer. I started in the chicken business when I was a wee lad of 13. I went to work for a fellow named Russell Harvey in Eureka, California. He had about 3,500 laying hens, a small mom-and-pop operation by today's standards. I don't think anybody could make a living on 3,500 chickens today, but unless they were organic, of course. But in those days, with eggs at about 75 cents a dozen, and it cost a penny to produce them, and they sold for a nickel, it wasn't too shabby. Well, anyway, old Russell Harvey taught me the chicken business, and what we fed those chickens was a prepared feed called mash. Mainly, it's made out of ground-up alfalfa. But in order to make chickens lay more eggs, and here's the funny little part, when a chicken is born, the little baby chick has all of the eggs, all of the female embryos that it's ever going to have. Usually, they have about 1,500. So a chicken in its lifetime is never going to lay a single egg more than the number of eggs that it already has when it's born. And it's not thousands of eggs. It's only a few hundred. It may be 300 eggs, or maybe 600 eggs, or 900 eggs, but we found that the chickens that have the longest longevity are those that aren't forced, and those that have the shortest lifespan are those that are forced. Now, how do you force more eggs out of a chicken? For instance, if you're going to spend a penny a day to feed this chicken 365 days a year, then it costs $3.65 to keep one chicken for 1 year. If the chicken lays one egg a day, that's twice as good as if she lays an egg every other day, or three eggs a week, or one egg a week. So we want to get all of the eggs out of this chicken. If we could, we'd get all 1,500 eggs out of this chicken in a week. But we can't do that, but we can get more eggs from a chicken faster by putting in certain chemicals and additives into the feed, into the mash. So what we're doing is we're feeding this chicken a scientific ration. And the amount is 11 pounds per ton. So we put in antibiotics, arsenic, and a whole host and plethora of chemicals that I haven't got the foggiest notion of what they are, what they do to you or for you, if they're good for you or bad for you. And I don't think anybody's ever tested them. The only thing that we've ever tested, and the only reason that we test, is do we get more eggs when we feed this ration than when we feed that ration? Well, there's 11 pounds that contain 28 of these chemicals. Some of them are toxic, some of them are poison, some of them are medicines. And we put those in the mash, and then we get the highest rate of lay that we can get. And because we do that, we can sell the eggs for less. And after all, this is what competition is all about. This is industrial farming at its best. We'll have 50, 100, 200, 300,000 chickens in a poultry operation. And of course, when you crowd all these chickens together, it promotes disease. So we promote antibiotics. So you can rest assured that we put the antibiotics right into the feed and feed it right to the chicken on a daily basis. And that antibiotic goes right through the chicken and into the egg. And you eat the egg, and therefore, you're being medicated with antibiotics. And that's one of the problems that we're having in America. Americans are becoming resistant to antibiotics. That is, you get pneumonia, and it used to be that penicillin would knock it out. Now there's only two antibiotics that's available against certain staph or strep infections that they find in hospitals now. Now, when we carry this to the ultimate extreme, Americans are going to be so immune to antibiotics that they can mainline the stuff, and it isn't going to cure any diseases. Now, that's the worst-case scenario. And eating these industrial eggs isn't going to help you any. So years ago, when I saw that problem, I said, well, I need to stop eating industrial eggs, and so I did. I eat organic eggs. I raise them myself. You can buy organic eggs. You can find sellers, you know, around. You get health food stores in every city. They'll find the eggs for you. You'll pay a little more for it. But then if you're paying $9,000 a year for health insurance and you're paying around $5,000 a year for food, the chemical lifestyle costs $13,000 a year. Think of that. Now, if you don't buy insurance and you save the $9,000 and you pay $5,000 on food, you've got an extra $9,000 to spend on organic food, don't you? And you wouldn't be any further behind than the chemical junkie, now would you? As a matter of fact, organic food does cost a little bit more, but it doesn't cost twice as much. It maybe costs half as much, half again as much. So from that perspective, when I don't buy insurance and I buy organic food, and furthermore, I raise my own food, so instead of paying the supermarket $5,000 a year, I pay the supermarket maybe $1,000 a year to buy ketchup and mustard. And I spend my money and time, effort, and energy growing my own food. Not only is it better for me, or I buy the food from some other local grower who's also growing organic, maybe a specialty chicken grower. And when I buy chickens, I buy 10 or 20 chickens and put them in my freezer, but they're all organic. Now, that's the better way to buy. It's the better way to live. That's why I do that. I don't eat chemical eggs. I don't eat chemical milk. And I don't eat chemical beef. And I don't eat chemical produce. I stay away from it, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now remember, 35 million other Americans are doing the same thing, and for a number of reasons. Now this is a philosophy of life. That's what we're doing here. Organic living means embracing the whole organic philosophy and making it a part of our everyday life. From food, clothing, nutrition, nutritional supplements, and personal hygiene products, to dishwasher detergents, garden chemicals, and furniture, organic options and safer alternatives are all available. The chemical age is drawing to a close, and as we begin to realize just what the fact that these toxic chemicals and what kind of a heritage these toxic chemicals have had on our health and environment, we're choosing to dispense with the mindset encouraged by the major manufacturers, and more of us are going organic. Living organically does not involve giving up the pleasures of life, nor does it imply a wholesale lifestyle change. It simply means being a more responsible consumer. An awareness of the issues is the starting point, and that's where we begin. No one can fail to be concerned about the issues raised by conventional farming methods. Only very brave people would choose anything other than organic once they knew all the facts. When you've learned how and why to choose an organic product, the rest becomes easy. Now, most of us, busy, stress-filled lives, and the prospect of undertaking anything that involves some effort may seem rather daunting. However, making the change to organic living can be one of the most satisfying things you ever do. Your health will undoubtedly benefit from it. Many converts experience almost total relief from annoying symptoms such as digestive and skin problems, chronic colds, sleeping disorders, nagging headaches, and when you reduce your toxic load, your body functions more efficiently and effectively, and you begin to both look and feel better. Furthermore, choosing your local food supply carefully and experimenting with different varieties, visiting farmers markets, or joining a food cooperative. Even just getting into the habit of reading food labels draws much needed attention to the glories of our food and its importance in daily life, because organic food tastes much better, and you'll rediscover the joys of eating and of even cooking. Organic gardening. whether you set up a single window box or devote the whole of your garden, creating a viable compost heap using companion planting and mulches is also enormously satisfying. And you'll enjoy the beauties of nature. As wildlife begins, you make your garden its home, and you can experience the countryside in your own backyard. Your plants will flourish, and you'll be able to relax and enjoy your creations. What is more, your garden will be safe, chemical-free, a place for your children to play in, and think about that. Running a home where indoor pollution and toxic chemicals play no part in your daily life. By using organic products wherever you can, you'll be creating a toxin-free sanctuary for your family. Your choices will have an impact on the environment and on the drive for animal-friendly fair trade products. When we look into the future, we find that parents of young children are often the first to choose organic products over conventional, and this makes sense for a multitude of reasons. And that's why we look at why organic is important for children. Over and above any other sector of our population, apart from the obvious health reasons, going organic helps to preserve the world in which we live and to make it a better place for our children to grow up in. And that's what this is all about, change and responsibility. It's about taking on board the ideology of a movement that has now captured the world by storm. It's about caring enough about ourselves to make that change. And that change will affect not only you and your family, but also the rural community close to where we live and you live and develop. In developing countries thousands of miles away, a healthful and economic way of life that's beneficial to them as well as yourself. And it's about enjoying a healthy, happy lifestyle that is in tune with the natural world and about providing a sustainable future for everything that lies within it. When you choose to live organically, you're taking part in a movement that holds the key to the future. Choose now and be part of the solution, not the problem. Now, just what is organic anyway? Well, organic is a term defined by law, and anything that bears an organic label is governed by a very strict set of guidelines. Most countries in the Western world have set out stringent measures defining what can be labeled organic. Rigorous standards now cover everything from certification to food production, packaging, and even distribution. So what's the problem then? Well, first of all, the guidelines differ between countries, and not every country has a recognized regulatory system in place. And this has led to concerns that many of the organic foods that we import may not meet our own standards here at home. Second, organic has become big business. Cases have occurred of unscrupulous manufacturers trading on the word organic without actually fulfilling the criteria to do so. With the growth of the organic industry, the number of regulatory agencies has increased, and literally dozens of cases exist where products have failed to meet those standards of one certification body only to be licensed by another. Furthermore, the word organic has become synonymous with health. Not surprisingly, consumers have been misled into believing that anything with an organic label is good for them. Controversy has recently erupted over the sale of unhealthy organics, such as cigarettes and colas. Can something known to harm one's health actually be labeled organic? Well, the answer to that is indeed it can. The organic governing bodies are well aware of the effects of the consumer boom and are becoming increasingly cautious about the products that are prepared and that they are certifying, and any persons or groups given an organic certification are now required to keep detailed records ensuring full traceability from farm or production plant to the table. Any infringement results in their license being suspended and their products withdrawn from the marketplace. So what does the term organic actually mean? Well, in 1995, the National Organic Standards Board, it's called the NOSB, in the United States, defined organic as follows. They said, quote, organic is an ecological production management system that promotes and enhances biodiversity, biological cycles, and soil biological activity. It is based on minimal use of off-farm inputs and on management practices that restore, maintain, and enhance ecological harmony. Now, when you purchase organic foods and products, you are supporting a complete agricultural system that will affect the future of the world around us. Now, if that sounds idealistic, it isn't, believe me. Supporters of organic farming have emerged as a powerful voice against the introduction and use of farming methods that can damage health, wildlife, and the environment, and even the planet as a whole. Organic means more than just healthy eating and farming humanely. It involves sustainable production and accountability, which reduces the use of non-renewable resources and maximizes use of natural on-farm resources. This all-encompassing approach has drawn millions of advocates from around the world. Now, the history of organics. And I might break in here to point out that I put a program on here not too long ago dealing with the big corporations like Heinz. You see, these big multinational corporations, the food companies, Heinz and General Motors, ADM, ConAgra, they have bought out a number of these organic companies. You see, all of the organic food produced in the United States represents 2% of the market. So 98% of the market is held by the big multinational corporations, but that 2% is growing at the rate of 30 to 20 to 40% a year. 20 to 40% a year. Think of that. 2 billion this year, and it could grow to nearly 2.4 billion next year. And then, you know, you take 20 to 40% of 2.4 billion, and it's growing exponentially. It doubles every so many years. So the big corporations like ADM want to buy in, and they are, and they have, they did, and they will in the future. And as a result of that, they then take their lobbying money and their lobbying tools, and they go to Washington and they say, hey, listen, we're all in favor of organics, and God bless organics, but it's a little bit unrealistic. You see, it's unreasonable to have 100% organic in a product. So we want you to pass legislation that says that if it's 95% organic, we can label it organic, because it's only got 5% inorganic in it. So if you're going to make a product, and, you know, let's just take a frozen food, let's say. You've got frozen dinner, TV dinner, and you're going to have vegetables and maybe fish, and maybe you're going to have a roll or a bread or something in there. And it's not possible for this company to get 100% organic because maybe the ingredients that go into the biscuit aren't organic. But it comprises less than 5%. And so in many cases, state legislatures have approved it. And so now when you buy a product that says 95% organic, it says organic on it, it's really 95% organic and 5% chemical. Now, with the honey industry, here's what they did. The honey growers wanting to become, or the apiary people wanting to become mainstream and industrialized, you know, with palletized pallets and forklifts and trucks, they said, look, if the honey has got 95% honey and 5% corn sugar, corn syrup, can we call that pure sous vide honey? And the legislature said, yeah. And then it went to 90, 85, 80, 75, 70, 65, 60, 55. Now it's down to if it contains 51% honey, 49% corn syrup, you can call that pure honey. No, it's not. It's just an adulterated piece of trash, but it's sold as. Now, wait until they put the word organic on there. I mean, we could have organic corn, produce organic corn syrup, and have organic honey, label it organic, and what have we got? We've got an adulterated half honey and half corn syrup, don't we? But we could put an organic label on it. Now, get ready for that, because that's what's coming next. And the reason for that is the big multinational corporations who have no real commitment to organic or health. They have one commitment, and that's profit in the bottom line. And it doesn't make any difference how much they have to lie, steal, cheat, or defraud the public to do that. That's what they'll do. And they'll go to the legislature to get the laws passed. After all, it's USDA approved. And if it carries a stamp that says USDA approved, it probably is not fit for human consumption. And when I see USDA approved, I don't buy it. Now, that's just me personally. All right, let's take a look at the history of organics. You know, the organic revolution is more of a resistance than a revolution. Indeed, until the 1920s, all agriculture was, in general terms, organic. Farmers used natural means to feed the soil and to control pests, diseases, and weeds. They found that the food reached the table in much the same form as it left the farm. In 1840, the German organic chemist, Justus von Liebig, published his famous work, Organic Chemistry, in its applications to agriculture and physiology. He discovered that because plants consume humus, it made sense to add humus, add it to the soil in order to improve their growth. He analyzed the chemical content of plants and then argued that if such chemicals were added to the soil, then the plant's growth would be stimulated. It was under his influence practical agriculture changed dramatically. Companies began to manufacture superphosphate of lime to add to compost piles. It sped up decomposition and thereby greatly improved yields. In the 1870s, these fertilizers were marketed as additions to compost piles, not as replacements for them. Together with mechanical help from reapers and tractors and the development of food canning techniques, these additives encouraged a major surplus of food in the Western world for the first time in history. Now, other changes were also underway at the beginning of the 20th century. Sir Albert Howard, a colonial Briton living in India, reinvented the compost pile and methods to use the natural resources of India best. So over a period of 12 years, he developed hundreds of strains of wheat that looked at proper soil drainage and irrigation that allowed wheat to be grown without the expense of fungicides, and he discovered that crops grown in soils with a high organic content were more disease and insect resistant than the same crops grown with chemical fertilizers. Now, above all, he shunned the fragmented approach of current agricultural research, which divided the soil, crops, livestock, and humans into separate components. He believed that all of these comprised one complex system, and that research into any one component and into altering that component would result in the rupture of the natural cycle of life and a dependency on artificial fertilizers and insecticides. And for this reason, Howard has been called the founder of organic gardening. Now, many modern agriculturalists discounted Howard's approach As the foundation of contemporary intensive farming took hold, such organic farming methods were discarded. However, on a smaller scale, the organic movement continued to grow. One of the best known promoters was an American farmer whose name was Jerome Rodale, who in 1940 began farming using Howard's theories. He founded the magazine Organic Farming and Gardening, now known as Organic Gardening, and in 1950, Prevention Magazine. Now, Rodale is probably the standard name in organic growing. They have a big farm, and they sell plants and books and things. They're from Pennsylvania. You'll find Rodale books in health food stores. You'll find it in gardening stores. Rodale, remember, is like Cadillac. It's a standard name in the industry, and what comes from Rodale is organic. They're serious players in the game. They're not fooling you like General Motors or ADM or Cargill. So you can depend upon what you get from Rodale. Now, in Europe, the first organic organization was set up in 1929, and it was based on the teachings of Rudolf Steiner, an Austrian scholar, who was concerned that the fertility of Germany's land was being undermined by the use of chemicals. The Biodynamic Agricultural Association, based in Europe, but now with offices in most countries around the world, including the United States, Canada, and the UK, uses Steiner's theory of biodynamics, which takes organic agriculture one step further. Biodynamic farmers, in addition to applying organic standards, use special preparations for yield, sprays, compost, and manure treatments, and pay close attention to practical rhythms in husbandry. Followers of biodynamics also pay special attention to companion planting, astrological timing, and Steiner's special potions, and the more spiritual interactions between people, plants, and the universe. Biodynamic farmers and growers are now found in 38 countries around the world. They are the symbol, which has become an internationally recognized and respected accreditation. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour. The Law Hour is brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, 1970, when the world's food supply was about 73 days for every man, woman, and child on Earth, it has slowly dropped year by year from 1970 until today. It's down to less than 38 days per person worldwide. Now, the global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. In Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing, essentially the same words. He used the terms false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Well, back in the 1920s, about half of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food for the rest of the world, and you and me. But today, we Americans have chosen to live in the city. And now only 3% of us live on the land. 97% of us then are not self-sufficient in our food production. We produce grain for export, all right. Then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala, and our food supply is in the hands of foreigners, multinational corporations. And these institutions support this global 2000 world population control program. These globalists, with their global genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's free of charge. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. So why don't you call right now? The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. My subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about organic. What is it? How does it work? Why does it work that way? And why should you want to participate in it? Well, if you're already in organics, I'm preaching to the choir. If you're not into organics, then listen up. You may want to. Because chemical agriculture is a threat to your life. It's a threat to your health, safety, and welfare. It has been, and we've known it for years. We just don't want to admit it. Many, many books have been written. I happen to be one of those old-timey farmers. I used to be in the chicken business. I went from that to the dairy business, and I got a first-hand look at how milk is produced. Milk. When I was in the dairy business back in the 50s and 60s, I discovered that we were putting antibiotics into the cows and into the milk. Not because the cow was sick, but because the bacteria count was too high. Now we find out that people in some cases are allergic to these antibiotics. It shouldn't be any wonder that many of you out there listening to me right now are lactose intolerant. Because the chemical milk that you're drinking isn't fit for human consumption, and your body is simply reacting to this chemical soup and rejecting it, and you develop an allergy. Now, when God designed milk, he made a land of milk and honey. Milk is good for your body. Cow's milk, sheep's milk, goat's milk, in fact, just about any kind of milk is for humans to consume. You're designed to consume milk. It used to be called nature's nearly perfect food. As a matter of fact, it is perfect for babies, calves, kids, lambs. Milk is the perfect food. When God designed it for each animal, he made milk. And he made the milk with all of the nutrition, all of the nutrients that the newborn needed. He also made that milk for humans to consume and mentioned that more than once in the Bible. But the milk of the Bible isn't pasteurized, homogenized, antibiotic, and added to or industrialized with the addition of vitamin D and vitamin this and vitamin that. I mean, you got a pure product called honey, or you've got an abortion called Sous B honey. You either have milk or you have an industrial goop or glop that's called homogenized milk. Now, most people that drink this homogenized milk don't seem to have any quarrel with it. Some people do, and then if they do, they stop drinking it. Milk consumption in the United States is down 30% since 1970. That's a percentage point a year. Coke consumption and soft drink consumption is up dramatically, 300-400% over the last 30 years. But milk consumption has gone steadily down, and it ought to go steadily down. It ought to go out totally, but that doesn't mean that milk is bad for you. Organic foods are good for you. Industrial foods are bad for you, but you don't know any difference because you've never had any organic foods. But once you make the shift, you'll find that your health and your allergies begin to disappear. Now, the major change in farming methods can be traced very specifically in the Second World War, when research on chemicals designed as nerve gas showed that they were also capable of killing insects. So in 1939, the first of a new class of insecticides called chlorinated hydrocarbons was developed as the answer to insect pest problems. They were toxic to most insect species, but were believed to cause little or no damage to plants and wildlife. Paul Mueller, who was awarded the 1948 Nobel Prize for Medicine for his research, developed this insecticide and in 1944 managed to prevent a winter typhus epidemic in Naples, Italy, by killing the lice that carried the disease. He said that he had, it was believed, found the perfect insecticide. It was called DDT. Well, during the Second World War, households on both sides of the Atlantic were encouraged to be self-sufficient and to grow as much food as possible. Britain's Dig for Victory campaign, for example, urged people to grow their own fruit and vegetables. Many small farms sprung up in response. However, the use of chemicals was heavily promoted, and a new way of farming was the result, leading to the outright dismissal of organic farming methods. So it was World War II that caused this need. And the need was filled with the toxic chemicals that were developed in the war to kill people on the other side with. In other words, they were chemical weapons of mass destruction. So with this chemical glop called DDT, they discovered that it would kill insects. And it was presumed that since it didn't kill you right away, it probably was safe. Nobody ever did any long-term studies on it. It was 15 or 20 years later that we began to take a look around at what DDT was doing to our environment. We took a look at, well, gee, we used to have birds and now we don't. Well, if you're going to kill all the insects with DDT, what do you need birds for? You see, the birds keep the insect populations in check. The insect populations only attack the weak plants. And when you get a lot of weak plants in a garden, marginal plants, the insects start to proliferate. The birds come along and eat the insects. When you pick up an apple and you notice that there's a little hole in it, there's nothing worse than biting into an apple and then finding out that you bit into half the worm. It's really revolting. It's disgusting. And that worm was designed by God to drill into the apple to make that apple unappetizing. And it is. You throw that apple on the ground. Let it rot. Because that rotten apple on the ground is adding humus to the ground and plant food for the tree so that next year's apples will be better and higher quality, more healthful and more nutritious. It's a natural cycle. It takes all of the garbage and waste and recycles it and puts it out in a shiny new apple next year. It's a neat program. It's a neat plan. You got to give credit where credit's due. Well, then in 1962, science writer Rachel Carson published Silent Spring, a book that created a public outcry. Carson criticized the indiscriminate use of chemical pesticides, fertilizers, and weed killers, citing case histories of the damage already done. The title refers to the ultimate disappearance of songbirds, whose numbers have been diminishing, in Carson's view, because of the effects of the insecticide DDT. Her book helped to spawn environmental protection measures And for the first time, the public challenged the belief that the chemical industry knew what was best for us. In the United States, the Vietnam War plunged public opinion, or changed public opinion, rather, about the official view, and the natural approach now began to meet with some acclaim. The organic gardening movement became mainstream, and farming was split into two distinct camps. In Britain, the organic movement gathered pace in the 1940s under the auspices of a Suffolk-based farmer, Lady Eve Balfour, inspired by the work of Sir Albert Howard and Sir Robert McCarrison, a director of nutritional research in India, who had discovered a relationship between diet and health. She began to experiment at her own farm. She wrote the first book on organics, entitled The Living Soil. In 1946, she joined with several others to set up the Soil Association. Then, for the next 30 years, Soil Association farmers and growers supplied organic food to specialized outlets. Lawrence Hills, a well-known garden journalist and one of the original founders of the Soil Association, created Britain's second organic organization, known as the Henry Doubleday Research Association, in 1958. He inspired hundreds of farmers to convert to organic methods, and today the HDRA, along with the Soil Association, sets the benchmark for organic standards worldwide. Now, this gives us the term going green. Now, you've probably heard a lot of bad comments about these greens and these greenies and a lot of these wacko environmentalists, and I agree with you. There's a bunch of wacko environmentalists and animal rights activists, and we tend to group all of these people together. But the truth of the matter is, I'm not a greenie, and I'm not an animal rights activist. I'm not in favor of brutality to animals, but I'm not in favor of putting animals out here equal to humans. Well, let's see now. Stand by. You're listening to The Law Hour, and the editorial review was sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hang on, let me tell you a little story here. You know, the genocidal policy of this global 2000 New World Order, well, they're the greatest threats to our lives, liberties, and property since Noah's flood. And now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. That's correct. It's 90% over the next 50 years. That's genocide, boys and girls. And I say, let's not delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny, this thing they call the New World Order, as George Bush calls it, and to compel it upon all of us. But you know, you and I don't have to participate in our own demise, and we don't have to help them finance them or stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and to survive this global 2000, this New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. My subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. You can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember this, georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. Let me give a little credit where credit's due here. This book is called Organic Living and 10 Simple Lessons. Karen Sullivan wrote the book, published by Barron's. Put out by a company called, Barron's Educational Series Incorporated, copyrighted 2001. I think if you had Amazon.com, probably, Barnes & Noble, any reputable bookstore probably have it. It's a softback. I don't know what the price is. And it's a little Bible on organics, and it's really dynamite. I doubt if it costs $10. Going green. Now let's take a look at this thing called going green. The Be Natural approach of the 1960s and 70s had an equal impact on both sides of the Atlantic. The focus on conservation and environmental issues and the growth of the green movement encouraged farmers to adopt organic methods. While initially slow to take hold, the movement has grown quickly since that time. Consumers have now begun to demand food and products that are organic, causing the greatest revolution in farming methods since the Second World War. Today, the demand for organic food is rising by about 40% every year, and the appeal for information about organic food and farming is increasing just as dramatically. With only 3% of the UK agricultural land turned over to organic farming, and only about 1/5 of 1% in the United States, considerable room exists for improvement. However, the sector, once dismissed as the pastime of crackpots and idealists, has grown into a business worth about $6.6 billion a year in the European Union and around 10 billion pounds, or about $14 billion worldwide. In any terms, that represents good business, and it's clearly on the increase. So it's growing. Now, organic standards are rigorous and cover every aspect of registration, certification, food production, permitted and non-permitted ingredients, the environment, and conservation, processing, packaging, and distribution. Standards are regularly updated and enforced by certification bodies around the world. And although they are not overseen on an international basis, the International Federation of Organic Agricultural Movements lays down a series of standards that must be upheld within Europe and the UK. In the United States, the USDA organic bill was passed in December 2000 and goes into force in February 2001. It'll be fully implemented by August of 2002. Now, to date, only 31 states have certification programs, and the term organic can only be used for goods produced under the authority of the Organic Foods Production Act. The U.S. organic industry is currently self-regulated, relying on third-party national certification organizations and state organic standards to ensure quality products that consumers should look for. The term certified organic. Now remember, at this moment in time, as I air this in 2004, the word organic or certified organic still has meaning on the package, but you can rest assured that it's going to be watered down. The best way that I like to look for organics is to ask the people that are growing them. For instance, down here in Arkansas, there's a fellow that grows organic chickens. Now, I grow organic beef, and I have organic milk. I don't allow my chickens to have corn that might be genetically modified, so I changed over to another grain. And people that are serious, people like myself and serious growers like the chicken farmer, we not only support it, we are part and parcel with it, and we're promoting it. We're part of it, and we're promoting it. And when you find a farmer like that, he'll preach a little sermon and tell you, yeah, that's right, I produce that way, and here's why I do that, and the rest of this food out here in the pit to eat. Now, when somebody starts talking sideways, you know, like a sidewinder rattlesnake, like, well, you know, we have mostly organic, or we like the concept of organic, or we kind of practice organic, or a lot of our products are organic, you want to stay away from that guy. He's not there yet. He's either not there, or he's a chemical farmer who's trying to deceive you. And there's a bunch of those guys out there. See, anybody can put the word organic. Anybody can flop around this word organic or certified organic, especially if you're just selling on a roadside stand. Or, you know, if you're selling this stuff, and who's going to check up on you? After all, it's pretty much self-regulatory. It's not exactly like, you know, the bank is checking up on who's writing these checks and who's passing counterfeit bills. The people that you deal with, you should be able to get a good feel for them. When you go to the farmer's market and you strike up a conversation with the guy that's selling the produce, or he's selling something over here, you know, you should be able to get good vibes from the guy. You know, when he starts talking about his garden and how he makes organic soil and how he makes compost, you know, there's a guy that you know is a serious player in the game. If this guy can't talk compost and he can't talk organics and he's not talking about worms and worm castings, this guy's a chemical farmer. Chemical farmers don't have the lingo. When you get through with this book, you'll have the lingo, and when you walk into the farmer's market, the guy that's selling the produce ought to be able to talk the talk as well as walk the walk. That's the bottom line. You're always going to have frauds. I don't care what you're talking about. There's always frauds and everything. So it's up to you to be able to identify the frauds and sort them out. Now we have imported goods. Imported produce is subject to the same rigorous checks and guarantees. It must also come from countries recognized as applying equivalent standards and inspection procedures. If no national standards exist, specific producers will be inspected by recognized certification bodies to ensure that standards are being met. So if you're in your neighborhood IGA or Kroger or Safeway supermarket and something is marked certified organic, it probably is. It may have 9 or 5% or 3% inorganic in it, but it probably is not, you know, chemical food mislabeled organic. It's better than nothing. But, you know, it may not be as good as the guy down the street who's putting compost and worm castings on his garden. Just let the buyer beware. So what's the difference? Well, everything labeled organic has a set of rules defining its production. Now, here's what makes these products different. All organic foods conform to the following specifications. Artificial fertilizers and pesticides are banned from organic agriculture, and no genetic modification or irradiation is permitted. So if you got a product that says GMO or it's irradiated or if there's a chemical fertilizers or pesticides, it's not organic. Now, canned, bottled, and frozen fruits and vegetables must conform to organic standards for production and packaging. And organic dried fruit does not contain sulfur dioxide, which is known to provoke extreme allergic reactions in some people. So when you look on the package and you see all of these additives that are put on there, those are chemicals. Sodium nitrite, sodium nitrate, monosodium glutamate, MSG, and so on. No, that's not organic. You know, it could be organic when it started out from the farm and then it got polluted. You know, right here, when I sell a cow at the sale barn, you got an organic cow there, but nobody knows what it is. They take the cow in, grind her up, mix her hamburger with everybody else's. My organic cow just gets mixed in with all the rest of the pus, blood, and guts that come out of industrial agriculture and isn't fit to eat. But if you could get that cow away from me, and she's clean to start with, and you grind her up for hamburger, now you got a product that's fit to eat. Now, dairy produce. Strict organic regulations cover all aspects of milk production and cheese making, including the farming methods, animal welfare, livestock diet, transport, storage, manufacturing procedures, and keeping records. You know, chemical sprays are not used on the fields where the cows graze, which do contain genetically engineered crops. Cows are not routinely given antibiotics or other drugs. If animals do become ill, then homeopathic and herbal remedies are used in the first instance, and antibiotics are used only as a last resort. I don't use antibiotics for any cause or reason. None. Zero. In fact, if your cows are kept in a woods pasture like mine are, they never get sick. Because that cow will go over and she will eat leaves off of wild grapes. She'll eat leaves off of oak trees. She'll eat whatever she needs to balance her diet, to balance her minerals and her vitamins. She doesn't get sick. If a cow comes down with a hard quarter for any reason, you know immediately her pH is out of balance. Give her vinegar and she'll clear up in 24 hours. Just apple cider vinegar. Clear right up. Milk is withdrawn from the market until antibiotic use has ceased. Well, I never use antibiotics. Organic milk can, by law, come only from dairy herds that are entirely organic. The diet of organic dairy cattle must be at least 60% grass, and approved concentrates must be mainly at least 85% of organic origin. And you see, here's where we're falling down in our standards. It has to be 85% organic. So you can have, you know, feed that is 15% chemically grown. All right. Well, that's not too bad, but hey, listen, wouldn't it be better if it was 100%? Hey, wouldn't it be better if that honey was 100% honey instead of 51% and 49% corn syrup? They water it down for profit, boys and girls. It's tougher to meet these organic standards. And I say that you should be a purist. I'm a purist. Organic growers are purists. We have a mission, and we stick with it. I don't like that 15% inorganic. Fewer animals are stocked on every acre of field, which means that no overgrazing occurs. And organic cheese is made from organic milk. Organic cheese. Organic milk, and is free from artificial ingredients such as flavorings and coloring. Hey, listen, we're about out of time. I got to break off here, and we'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same station, with the same story. And I'll tell you some more about this organics, and we'll keep after it until we get it down pat. You can get a copy of this book, by the way. It's called Organic Living. Barron's, Karen Sullivan is the name. All right. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Again, for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through my website at georgegordon.org. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Well, there's the signal. It says our time's up. I got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.